Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hour number two, what's happening? Tinky and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio Company from the Rocket Mortgage studio here, obviously. Lots going on. Rocket Mortgage giving away $2.5 million prizes during Super Bowl 55. That could be used to buy your dream home. Seam rules and enter for free today. Just go to rocketmortgagesquares.com. So we obviously acknowledge the passing of Hank Aaron at the top of the hour, at the top of the show, which was also the top of the hour, 3 o'clock hour Eastern. And, you know, you didn't really expect to wake up to this. Sometimes people are sick and you kind of sense it. And didn't really have that sense with Hank. I don't know that he was a full pillar of health, unfortunately, but nobody really had the impression that it was quite this bad. So to see that, you know, the first tweet and then this incredible wave of support and acknowledgement for one of the all-time greats. Let me just geek out for a sec, Petit, because I don't want to assume everybody knows statistically, and I'm not going to go too deeply. If you want to get the stats, you could get them. But here's a little thumbnail sketch, and then we can get to maybe more substantive things. He's not really defined just by his numbers, but here are a few things I think everybody should know. Number one, 25-time All-Star. 25-time All-Star, first all-time.
That's basically every year, right?
For the most part, it's every year. 755 home runs. You want to tell me it says second in the record books? For me, it's number one, not Bonds. In terms of RBIs, 2,297 RBIs, number one. 305 batting average, obviously not number one, but for somebody who hits almost 800 bombs, to hit over 300 tells you all you need to know. 6,856 total bases, you guessed it, number one. WAR position players all time, fifth. He has seven top three MVP finishes, right? And to me, I don't know where I saw this, obviously, or if I did, I would give the proper attribution. I'll find it at some point. If you were to delete all 755 of his home runs, right, he would still have 3,000 hits, which obviously is that benchmark everybody pursues and few actually get to. There is nobody in the history of baseball, if you delete their, that is in the 3,000 hit club, if you delete their home runs, would still have enough to hit 3,000 or more hits. Is he number one of all time? I don't know. Is it Babe Ruth? Is it Willie Mays? Is it Hank Aaron? Is it Lou Gehrig? Is it Joe DiMaggio? Is it Honus Wagner? Is it Rogers Ornsby? Is it Ted Williams? Is it Stan Musial? I don't know. But what I do know is that when you look at the statistical accumulation, he is undeniably, and this is where I'm going to incorporate Teak, obviously, undeniably a top five player of all time. And when you incorporate what he had to fight against, you know, Jackie Robinson is revered for the obvious reasons, breaking the color barrier. But let me just say this, and this might be uncomfortable for some, but this is the way it is. When you, even in New York, but even back then when he came up with the Brooklyn Dodgers, just the way New York has always been, it's always been a melting pot of every ethnicity, you know, whether it was the Irish or the Italian or the Germans or the Jewish people. I mean, New York was always more accepting. Now, the black-white dynamic, I'm not saying it was perfect then, and it's not perfect now. But what Hank Aaron had to battle in the Deep South, a couple of years after the great Jackie Robinson, I believe that there was more vitriol in his pursuit of that home run record, all right? The great Babe Ruth, who very well might be the greatest of all time. But to go through that in the 70s, in the Deep South, I believe that was either comparable or even worse in terms of harshness, what Jackie Robinson had to go through in New York City.
Yeah,
I honestly believe that.
You might be right. And in Atlanta, it is... it took a long time for people to come around down there, and some have not still. I think the best way to illustrate this, BT, is listen to his 755th home run.
Good job.
Or 715th home run, I should say. 755 all time. But his 715th home run by the incomparable.
One ball and no strike. Aaron waiting. The outfield deep and straight away. Fastball is a high drive into deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone. What a marvelous moment for baseball. What a marvelous moment for Atlanta and the state of Georgia. What a marvelous moment for the country and the world. A black man is getting a standing ovation in the deep south for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol. And it is a great moment for all of us, and particularly for Henry Aaron.
That's interesting, BT, because think about what he – this is a baseball moment. This is the greatest home run hitter at the time, and probably still ever, breaking a barrier that not a lot of people maybe wanted to see him break and or even thought that he could do it, BT. And he has the presence of mind to talk about his race because it was that important to the story. Right. If Vin Scully calls that and it's you don't hear the racial part of this, that it's, you know, a black man in the deep south. I don't think it has as much power.
It doesn't.
As it does. And again, this is the great Vin Scully calling this. And he had the presence of mind to talk about what everybody maybe didn't want to talk about, but was important to say. Obviously he's the greatest for a reason, but what an unbelievable call. And I think the thing that that visual of Henry Aaron running around the bases, we all remember what happens. Like these guys come out of the stands and they are
I think it was two guys.
Two guys come out and pat him on both sides.
Right around second and third base.
They're both white guys.
I know.
Right? Think about that. You know, because perceptually then, this wasn't like 1990.
Mid-70s.
This is mid-70s, 75 or 6. I can't remember what year it was. Yeah, 75. But this is an era when some black people would have been terrified with two white guys jumping out of the stands and chasing you down on the base path. And even though it's the middle of the game, but they were going out there to celebrate him, which is what I think makes it even more compelling and amazing. And those images, they never leave your mind.
Right? No.
They never will. It's iconic. And I was listening earlier today as he was giving commentary, because obviously they wanted to interview him afterwards. And he said, "I just thank God it's over." As humble as it could be. Yep. Not like, this is awesome. I'm the greatest ever. It's like, I just thank God that it's over.
Teague, and he remained, he maintained that humility
during
the whole home run pursuit with Barry Bonds. I mean, he had every right to stand up and shout and kick and scream and denigrate the pursuit and, water down and point to the PEDs. And he just... he retained his class. And, you think about the way, because that visual is incredible. And right around, he's between second and third. You can still see the uniform, the grainy footage, the ball go over to the left field fence. By the way, I think Dusty Baker was in the on-deck circle.
Is that right?
I believe Dusty Baker was in the on-deck circle right there. And his mom was there. And you think about, like, the vitriol on social media, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that it's not jarring. I mean, I've gotten, over the course of my career, very few, like, truly threatening, where I felt really uncomfortable. And I'm thankful for that, quite frankly. And hopefully that never changes, I don't mean where somebody questions, your talent or your take, oh, you're wrong. I mean where it's truly... to the point where you're like, wow, that was next level scary. That's one thing. Now, there are people who do get bombarded with that digitally. But to me, there's something far more jarring than opening a letter that's handwritten, which is what he had to do all the time. Now, he could have not read them. But every day he came to the ballpark, there was a sack like Santa Claus on Christmas Eve filled. Now, some great letters, clearly. Let's not paint everybody with this tainted hate brush. But a lot of those letters were derived from hate. And to me, just again, maybe I'm overthinking it, but it's more jarring because for somebody to take pen to paper, write, put it in an envelope, put a stamp, walk down to the post office or the mailbox and stick that in to direct it to you.
Yeah.
Is a lot more of an arduous path than typing out characters and hitting enter.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know that is just a different level of deep-seated hate.
Yeah, there's effort. That's one of the reasons that social media can it gets very dirty and grungy, and I don't it feels non-American. Like, this isn't the America that we know when you look at social media a lot. But the reason that happens is because it's so easy just to have an idea and send it out, and all of a sudden it goes. But to sit down and write something and to think about how to write it and script it and then mess it up and brawl it up and do it again and get it just right and send it out, it takes effort.
Yes.
It takes thought.
A calculation.
Yes, that's right. It's a better way to put it. It's a calculated thought as opposed to an impulsive thought. Impulse.
Boom.
I mean, that's why I ignore a lot of the stuff on social media, because so much of it is impulse.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are very intelligent on social media, but a lot of people are not.
For sure.
The impulse you would ignore. But if you're getting a letter from somebody, it's an effort. Think about when you get a letter now, if you've ever gotten a letter recently.
A letter?
Last letter
I got?
What's that?
From Amy Trask.
Is that right?
It's right in my, I'm not like a reader, but it's right in my office,
funny.
My desk from the great Amy Trask. Yeah, letter I've gotten.
I always appreciate when people handwrite notes and they send them because it's just, I don't know. I hear what you're saying.
Well, it's personalization. It's a more intimate.
But to your point, regarding Hank Aaron, Henry Aaron, he got a lot of that personal hate.
Yes.
He knew it was personal.
Well,
I was listening to Torrey Hunter, because Torrey Hunter obviously was a great Brave, and he was talking about, how hard it must have been, how daunting it must have been for Hank Aaron to concentrate on being as great as he was, playing in Atlanta, in the South, with all of that hate that was going on around him. Mm-hmm. And, they talk about, what's greater than God? He was like Hank Aaron, because he had the perseverance and the patience and the dignity and the gentlemanliness to weather all of that and not come off as angry I don't know how he did it back then, especially because he was a great. It's one thing if you're just a guy, but if you're a great and people don't want to see you be great, managing that is difficult.
He's one of the most stately figures in the history of sport.
Yeah.
He really is one of the most stately, respected figures in all the sport. And, it's been a little tainted now with the PEDs, but certainly when he was pursuing this, and even when Bonds was the most cherished record, as much as baseball has dropped a bit in terms of, mainstream interest or consumption from our childhood, in terms of the cherished record books, like the home run record.
Yeah.
I mean, we know that Kareem's got the most points in the NBA. We all know that 38,000, whatever it is, at 337, it's 38 something. And I can even see the hook shot when Magic gave his little hook shot from the corner. I still remember seeing him. I think it was against the Jazz. I think Jazz or the Denver Nuggets. I think it was Utah. But the home run record is, I mean, come on. And for him to do that, and you think about stadium security back then, and, now digital, and there's just ways to monitor stuff. I mean, to the ability to sneak in a gun to a stadium.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'm not trying to sound, reckless or flippant or whatever, but it was a lot easier back then, and, as he's rounding those bases, or as he's standing in the on-deck circle, probably more specifically, as a stationary figure, how his mind didn't wander, and you spoke to what Torrey Hunter brought up, didn't wander to that possibility, and then still be able to remain on point and on task for the greatest obstacle challenge in all the sports, hitting a spherical object that's exploding at 95 miles an hour, or a slider that's darting. I don't know how you maintain that tunnel vision. I don't know how you do it, but he's an all-time player. He's an all-time gentleman. Can I give you a two-minute story real quick?
Go ahead.
Okay. I think I said this once during the pandemic, but if there's ever a time to reset it, and I certainly don't assume every audience is the same, today's obviously the day to do it. Now, I'm holding in my hand, I've got an autographed Hank Aaron baseball, right? And if you look and you watch this, I'm obviously in my home studio. I think the only other thing I have autographed, I have something from Bob Feller. I've got Hank Aaron. And I've got something from Joe Klecko. Everything else is my children, stuff for the show, obviously Jen, a couple of the bottles of scotch when the show's over, you know what I'm saying? Well, I'm not a big autograph guy, right? I'm just not. This baseball from Hank Aaron was given to my dad, all right? This is an amazing story, but I'll try to condense it. So my dad, Teeknos, retired cop, retired detective, but at this point I think he's still a cop. I don't think he was a detective yet. He's on the softball team, and my dad was a ball player. He could play. He could hit. And he's on the NYPD All-Star team, right?
Nice.
And, yeah. I mean, my dad was good, man. My dad could play. And not as good as me, but he could play. And they go to Ohio, right, to play the Ohio Police Department All-Star team. And they're playing, the Reds are playing the Braves that day. It's the mid-70s. And the softball game was rained out. I don't think they had a tarp.
Yeah.
So obviously that got rained out. But major league game, you got the tarp. It's artificial surface. You're playing the game. Long story short, guy that my dad grew up with, Frank Tepidino from Brooklyn. Frank Tepidino, look it up. Baseball reference, Frank Tepidino says, Charlie, bring your boys. You know, I'll leave you tickets and come watch the game. So I think they were behind the dugout. I'm almost positive they were behind the dugout. They were 1-0 game. Frank didn't play much. Plays that game. I don't know if he pinch ran or got a base hit. He scores the only run. They win 1-0. That's actually the funny irony. After the game, this is where the ball comes from. Frank says to my dad and a few of his buddies on the team, hey, listen, we're going for a couple beers, a couple steaks. Come out. It's Matthews, Eddie Matthews, and Hank Aaron.
Get out.
Yeah. So great. They go to the steakhouse. They have beers. They have steaks. It's not steaks. They have a steak with Hank. And they have this incredible dinner. And that's where this baseball from the mid-70s.
Wow.
My dad has had it. I think it was 74. 73 or 74. And if I take it out, and it's been touched to me, it's actually pretty scuffed up.
Yeah.
And the reason it's scuffed is because, you know, obviously I was a ball player, played every day. We used to lose tennis balls and run out of balls. There's no Amazon. So I go to my dad's trophy case, right? I had about 7 or 8 years old. I didn't even really have many trophies yet. I just started playing. I play with this in the street with my buddy Ratman, Tommy
Get
Radigan.
Out of here.
Swear to God, throwing ground balls in the street with this Hank Aaron ball. And my dad's the best. He didn't get mad. He's probably deep down saying, like I would say, look at my son. He loves baseball. I'm proud, right? Which is cool. Didn't yell at me. Could have easily yelled, oh, that's the Hank Aaron ball. He was so cool. My first job in 99, I'm interviewing Pete Rose. And I get a ball from Pete Rose. And I give it to my dad, who then puts it on his mantle. And I said, all right, Pops, I know I scuffed up your Hank Aaron ball, but now you have the all-time hits leader, you know, from your son.
Yeah.
And now you have still the all-time home run leader, which he has since passed on to me. And this is now in my office. That's where I got this Hank Aaron ball from.
That's a great story.
And he said, talk about a man of character, a man of substance, a man of humility, a man of giving. He actually had a dinner and spent 3 or 4 hours with Hank. And he says, truly, one of the nicest people he's ever met.
That's amazing.
Just wanted to share that story
today.
That's
a great story. Personal, it's perfect, too.
Yeah, thank you, man. So, rest in peace, Hamrin. One of the best of all time. Definitely top five. Mount Rushmore material, no doubt. And he is as stately a figure as we've ever had in the game, there's no doubt. All right, Teek, let's get a timeout. We'll get back to some football here. You know, we mentioned X-Factors with Chad Ochocinco, who we had on the first hour of the show. X-Factors for the games this week. I got one for you, and you specifically should love it. It's right in your wheelhouse. We'll get to that, and we'll get to the Shaq stuff later as well. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right, coming up next segment, Inbounds, Out of Bounds. As if Steve Nash doesn't have enough on his plate, now he's got a little back and forth with one of the young stars of the NBA that's not even on his team. We'll get to that coming up, Inbounds, Out of Bounds, and Shaqed in a Fool, starring Shaq. I don't know. I didn't like what went down with Donovan Mitchell. That was an ugly look for Shaq. We'll get to that coming up, 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. So, outside of the – Tiki, let me set you up first, obviously, as the NFL guy here. Mm-hmm. Outside of the four quarterbacks – give me an X factor. Either game, either side of the ball, give me one that jumps out. What do you got?
So there's a couple of names that have been interesting on the Buffalo Bills side that we all know. Ed Oliver is one. Remember, he was the first-round draft pick
sure.
2 years ago?
Two years ago. What did he go, ninth overall, something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, I think he was. I'm looking it up. I think it was two years ago. But so him and Tremaine Edwards, who was their first-round pick 2 seasons ago, their names come up, but we don't necessarily talk about them a lot. So we're talking X factors here.
Yep.
And this is obviously in the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs game, that AFC Championship game that'll be up in Arrowhead. Now, these two teams met earlier in the season, BT, and we all remember what happened. The Buffalo Bills didn't play a lick of man coverage or try to blitz. Why? Because Pat Mahomes is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL against the blitz. Interestingly, the only quarterback that's better against the blitz is Josh Allen.
Oh, here we go.
So the X factor to me, because what decided that first game between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Buffalo Bills was not Pat Mahomes going crazy and picking apart the zone, hitting Travis Kelce or Tyreek Hill. It was running for 245 yards, BT. Clyde Edwards-Helaire. This is when we both thought he was winning Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
Until Justin Jefferson came in and stole the thunder, and they picked up Le'Veon Bell, which obviously crushed his carry total. But still, Clyde Edwards-Helaire rushed for 161 yards, BT. And as a total, they just dominated the line of scrimmage. And so when I look at the X factors in this game, it's going to be run defense, because obviously the Bills run the ball effectively too. Most of that is with their quarterback, however. Mm-hmm. But for the Bills, Ed Oliver's got to have a hell of a day. So does Vernon Butler and Jerry Hughes. If these guys are compromised or not on their game, and you know, this Kansas City Chiefs team, which isn't necessarily known for being a heavy run offense, starts, you know, picking up chunk plays play after play, it's going to be a long day for Buffalo. So the X factor for me is the front 4/7 for the Buffalo Bills defense, not the guys on the offense we most want to talk about. It's
gotcha.
This defense. They cannot give up 240 yards again.
I like it. Now we're getting into the weeds. Here we go. We're getting off the obvious trail. I like that. 46 carries to pick up those 245 yards in that 26-17 win.
You can't stop us.
Yeah, exactly. We're running, and good luck. Yeah,
exactly.
We can do whatever we want. Now, I'm going to actually focus on an aspect of the running running the ball, but it's actually pertaining to the Bills. They got to run the ball a little bit here. They have to run the football a little bit, and they have to run the football a little bit conventionally. I know that Josh Allen, you know, every week he's going to tuck it 5, 6, 7, 8 times.
Yep.
And you go back to the same. Now it's a one game sample, but this is not a deviation from what has actually transpired for a while for the Bills. If anything, these stats are a bit of an embellishment, because it's far worse than this. This game with Kansas City, 23 carries, 84 yards, right?
Yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, you know, it's a lot better than what they usually get.
Yeah.
3.7 yards a carry. But when you begin to pick apart and you delete the 8 carries and the 5.3 yards a pop from Josh Allen, now all of a sudden you're getting in the neighborhood of 15 carries, 40-ish yards, 38 yards, and 2.3, 2.4 yards a carry. You know, the weather, by the way, could be a factor for both of these games. Checking both of the advanced weather reports, it could be wet, sloppy, which I hope we don't get. Although I wouldn't mind seeing that at Lambeau.
Mm-hmm.
That would be kind of cool.
Frozen tundra.
Yeah. Maybe I'm playing into the history of it. It seems
of
cool.
Of course you have to. I mean, yeah. You kind of want to see that. I wouldn't mind snow in that game.
Yeah, and I want to see if Brady can fight through that. I'm not saying he can.
Yeah.
But remember when your Giants, you know, beat Brett Favre, Brett Favre looked like he wanted to be, and that was his home field.
That's right.
I mean, Coughlin's head was about to pop off like an icicle. It was beat red, but so was Brett Favre, who looked like he had no interest being there.
Yeah, it was the home team that wilted, so to speak.
Yeah.
With Brett Favre throwing that interception at the end of the game that set up the Lawrence Tynes field goal. So
Correct. I just, you know, I don't think they have to have any lofty numbers like 32 carries for a 153. No, but you got to run the ball more than 15 times with Singletary and Moss. I think you really have to.
No, I think you're right, BT.
It's the X factor for me.
And again, was it earlier this week? I think it was because of the wind. at the Buffalo Bills Jack
Ravens
game.
Yeah, it was very windy.
Right? Remember Kurt Warner said all of these games should be indoor.
Which was ridiculous. We love Kurt, but
of course it was ridiculous. Come on, but Kurt. But he made an interesting point. Not there, but he, okay. A subsequent point about why the Super Bowls, generally speaking, are either indoor, because they've been in cold weather states, like the Minnesota one that we went to, and I did not even want to go outside to do anything.
Oh, it was, how cold was it?
It was -4.
It was cold.
Like all day.
It was
it never got above like -degrees.
It was miserable.
But the game was in a dome. So, yeah. I mean.
But, although MetLife, New Jersey, but it wasn't that cold.
They got lucky as hell. They got lucky as hell, BT, because it was 42 degrees on the game day. The next day, it dumped about a foot and a half of snow.
They got so lucky in
MetLife. But my point is, Warner basically said, you know, you want all things equal so that the best team wins, right? Mm-hmm. Not the team that can play best in certain circumstances, like wind. You know, the Ravens missed two field goals. Tustin Tucker missed two easy, not easy, but you know what I mean, two makeable field goals for him. And you knew it was going to be a tough scoring day for them. And they, you know, except for the Lamar Jackson interception, it's a 10-7 game, right? Mm-hmm. So weather is going to be an issue. And when weather is an issue, as it will be in both of these games, VT,
yep.
the team that runs the ball, I mean, I hate to say it because we want to say it's a quarterback league, but the team that runs the ball best, they're going to win, right? Because you're going to make more plays on tough weather days with your run game than you will with your passing game. It's just logical, right? Mm-hmm, so in both of these games, it's who can do that best, which is why when I look at this Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Green Bay Packers game, as much as I love touchdown Tommy and you know the weapons that he has, even though Antonio Brown has been ruled out, I think the advantage here goes to the home team. You know, obviously the quarterbacks, you know, say notwithstanding, A.J. Dillon has become a force for this Packers offense. Aaron Jones, we know, is he's been great, one of the best scoring running backs in football. The home team has the advantage, one, because of the weather, but also because I think they have a more potent run game when you look at the NFC Championship game.
It's not the most fun thing to talk about.
No.
It's not. But it's
the reality. It's the reality of playing crappy weather games. If you can't run the ball, you're in trouble.
Yep. I want to play this for you, and then we're gonna get a break here, get the update from Matt, come back, get inbounds, out of bounds. But, you know, we're talking about tangible stuff here, the ability to run, yards per attempt, yards per carry, et cetera. Weather, that's tangible. You can quantify what's the weather. It's harder to quantify leadership, right? So if I was looking for an unquantifiable X factor from the Packers and the Pats, I might actually focus on not Aaron Rodgers' greatness, which is snap to snap apparent, but something he doesn't get a lot of credit for, which is leadership. And that's something Coach LaFleur touched on this week. I wanted to play this. Go ahead, guys.
You know, it's funny because I think it's very different than Tom Brady, who leads probably similarly. He talks a lot, but it's more emotional.
Demonstratively with Brady, for
definitely.
Sure.
Definitely. Definitely more emotional and demonstrative and in your face and you got to do that. Whereas Aaron Rodgers, I mean, I wonder, honestly, and this is I can never know this answer because I don't know him well enough. And, you know, maybe I'll get a chance to ask him at some point, but I doubt I will. Like, in those you know, last, say, 5 or 6 years, this is before LaFleur, did you really believe that you had a team that could win a championship, right? And the answer is probably no. At least my mind would say he probably thinks it was no, even though he went out and played his ass off all the time. But these last couple of years, you got to know he's seeing the urgency and the opportunity to win a championship. And so in those moments we talked about, like, those are high-pressure, anxiety moments. What happens to you? With Aaron Rodgers, as Coach LaFleur just said, you could tell his heartbeat just slows down.
Mm-hmm.
It just becomes that guy. We're okay, guys. We're going to get this done. We're going to do this, X, Y, Z, yada, yada, yada. I bet that's really like calming to a team that's anxious and been looking for another championship for a while.
He also does shoot you the passive-aggressive eye once in a while, which could be unnerving if you're not wired in a tough way. But I hear you. He doesn't get that credit.
No, in fact, it was always the other way, right? It was always like he's a bad, you know, he's just
excellent point,
right? Remember that? Like, yeah, he's not a great teammate. Like, yep, nobody really knows him.
That was just, that was a narrative to the point where we had former teammates come on,
right?
And most refuted that, and there were, but there were other teammates. I know when we had guys on to address that story directly. I know it was at least two players. They both refuted, but there was others, you know, other outlets, and whether it's print or whatever, where they said the opposite.
That's right.
That he wasn't a great leader, and that he was passive aggressive, and that maybe didn't have the pulse of the team, whatever. So his leadership is something that doesn't get a lot of props, but at least for this iteration of Packers, it's palpable. It's got an impact, no doubt. All right, Teak, inbounds, out of bounds, coming up next. Steve Nash, he's been coaching for 15 games. He got a beef already, not even with somebody on his own team. Got a beef with somebody in the NBA. We'll get to that after Axe update. We'll get to the Shaq, Donovan Mitchell stuff. And, of course, we'll finish with football, give you predictions, obviously, including what we think will happen against the spread. But Axe update is right now. Here's Rich. Sunday on CBS, a spot in Super Bowl 55 is the prize, where the Buffalo Bills take on the Kansas City Chiefs. It's the AFC Championship game. And we get you set up for the game starting at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific, with JB and the guys on the NFL Today. It's the AFC Championship game coming up Sunday only on CBS. All right, Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. So we'll get to the Shaq stuff at the top of the hour, 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific. Was Shaq just dishing it real and, you know, just kind of saying what needed to be said maybe? Or was Shaq totally out of bounds? We'll hit that coming up, but speaking of bounds, time for some inbounds, out of bounds. Steak, you ready to hit it? See what's up?
Yep, let's do it.
Let's go.
Anything can happen in sports and often does. What's right? What's wrong? And who's just crazy? We decide. Inbounds and out of bounds now. Tiki and Tierney.
All right, Tiki, here we go. Good question out of the chute. On Wednesday, we discussed the potential for Matthew Stafford to maybe fill Phil Rivers' shoes in Indianapolis. Now, yesterday, Washington hired former line GM Martin Mayhew as their new GM, and who was also the first overall selection ever and first overall by Mayhew back in the day in 2009. That'll be Stafford, so there's obviously synergy there. Now, our old Boomer Esiason. Nobody cares about hockey, Boomer. Our own Boomer Esiason said in the CBS Sports Minute that he's hearing that Stafford wants out of the D.
Detroit yesterday hired Dan Campbell as head coach, giving their former tight end a 6-year contract. This move left most Lions fans who had hoped for Jim Harbaugh or Robert Saleh scratching their heads. Personally, I think it's great to see this NFL lifer finally rewarded. He'll have his work cut out for him, especially if he and rookie general manager Brad Holmes decide to move on from Matthew Stafford, who I'm hearing wants out.
Look at Boomer. That's got to be a first. We play a sports minute as sound. Boomer dropping some nuggets. All right, interesting. Inbounds, out of bounds. Washington would be the best fit for Stafford coming up in 2021.
Out of bounds to me, VT. Mm-hmm. I still think it's the Indianapolis Colts. The Indianapolis Colts are ready to win right now. They have skill position players. They have a really good defense, as we've been talking about for the last couple of years, even though statistically, it'll scratch your head when you look at where they rank, but they're still a really good defense, the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah.
And the division is completely up for grabs. So, I mean, Tennessee Titans have been, you know, dominate the last year and a half or so. But still, I think the Colts are the team that are most in need of an elite quarterback. And if he goes there, it puts them on a deep playoff run trajectory.
I'm with you. You know, I love the Colts. I think that's the most desirable spot. There's going to be a lot of moving parts to the quarterback position coming up this offseason, as we've chronicled a lot on the show. So for me, Colts number one. I love what Washington's building. I really do. And I'd love to see them get a young quarterback where that timeline of progression is more in sync. You know what I mean? Not that Washington can't win the division next year. I just don't see them necessarily competing for a championship.
Yeah, that being in sync part, that's a really good point. You know what
Thank
I mean? It is, because they're not, I mean, if you go bring an old quarterback in who might, like, walk off a cliff in 2 years, right? It's like,
where are you then at that point?
Was it worth it? Correct. No, you're right.
And he's obviously not old enough where we expect him to walk off a cliff, but there's probably better options.
Yeah, listen, like Indy.
like Indy. I mean, even better, different players for Washington.
Oh, I
that
see.
Would
I
be did. More
yeah,
in line with their timeline if they don't hit that during the draft. I jotted down a bunch. To me, Washington's way on the list, way down on the list. I got the Colts. I got Miami, if you want to make a move there. I've got the Raiders, if you want to move on from Derek Carr. I've got the Carolina Panthers as very interesting. I've got the Rams as very interesting. Again, these are not necessarily realistic in terms of moving on from Goff, although they could.
Yeah.
You could move on from Teddy B. That, to me, is realistic. Yeah. But there's a lot of teams in front of Washington at this point.
Yeah.
Stafford.
By the way, all those quarterbacks that we talk about, at the post-June trade,
yeah,
it works for all of them.
There you go. Okay, nice.
The cutting and pre-June cutting and all that, that doesn't work. The post-June trade, that works for almost all of these quarterbacks we're talking about.
And by
the
way,
might need to be out.
I'm sorry about that, Tiger.
Yeah, go ahead.
My bad. By the way, I'll do a wrap. But my bad. The Boomer, I want to get back to Boomer sec here. I don't even know if Boomer writes his own minutes. Does he write? Does Boomer write his own minutes?
I don't know.
What do we know? D-Cell, does he write his own minutes? Or does Boomer's team of production people just have it ready for him when he ambles in the morning? It's my guess. Can't prove it. Don't know it to be true. But I know that when you hear a sports bitter from me or Teak, we got to actually do it.
It's off the dome. It's off the dome. Yours is like literally off the dome.
Oh,
at least I put mine to pad.
You know what? I used to write them out, but at this point I've just got my thoughts and I'd rather do it organically like that. But remember, Boomer, nobody cares about hockey, Boomer. One of the great drops at WFAN.
Are you in or are you out?
Let's get to Steve Nash. He's had a busy week dealing with the Harden trade and the Kyrie drama. Now he's got a new beef, this time with somebody on a different team. During the Nets win over the Hawks, this was back on December 30th. Remember, they gave up like 148 points, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Nash took exception to Trae Young drawing fouls by backing into defenders after dribbling by them, saying, quote, "That's not basketball." Yesterday, The Athletic published a story about the move, quoting Young, saying, quote, "I learned a lot about drawing fouls from Nash. If he says it's not basketball, he must have been saying it about himself because he's done it a couple of times throughout his career." End quote. Interesting. Trae Young knows his history. Watches some film.
Yeah.
In or out, players should not be able to draw fouls by intentionally backing into defenders before taking a shot.
I'm going to say out of bounds of this. I think this is all the foul. You just have to look at the nature of blocking fouls. I think that's what obviously is called here. If the defender is moving and making contact, then it's a foul. So if you are the defender, just stand still. You'll get a charge. Maybe it's a backwards charge, but the rule of verticality, right?
Oh, here we go.
It works both ways. So I'm going to say out of bounds. I don't think you should penalize those guys for trying to draw fouls that way.
Yeah, I'm going to say out of bounds too. Now, again, because it's a little confusing, not that I'm confused, but people could be confused. What Nash is speaking about directly is off the dribble,
mm-hmm,
and then you back into them,
yeah,
which I actually kind of get.
Yeah.
But the way it's worded.
But if he's stationary, it's not a foul. You know what I mean?
The defender.
Like, you own your space.
Oh, absolutely. It could be a charge, actually.
That's exactly what I was saying. I got you.
But there's also the interpretation, the question, by backing into defenders, think about like the work in the post.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you get the ball and, you know, you might initiate contact, you might go into him a little bit, and then what's a common move, and you see Durant do, Kobe used to do this, MJ did this, after you back into him, you immediately withdraw, and then you up fake real quick, so now they're reacting to not that it's a violent force, but the defender's reacting to the bot, to your back, to their chest, right?
Yeah.
And now they're coming up on you, and then the pump fake, bite, and boom, two shots. I mean, that's the easiest thing if you know how to play, if you're good like these guys. To get the whistle, so.
But I don't think this. This isn't what he's talking about.
No, but I'm just reading the way the question's written.
Yeah,
you know,
true.
So I'm answering.
That's
it two
a good
ways.
Point. But what he's actually talking about is Trae Young goes around the defender.
I understand.
And then once he's passed him, and that defender is trailing,
backs into him.
He stops and backs into him.
I understand. I don't love that. I'm just differentiating the between.
But if that defender is still moving, it still should be a foul. That's my point, and yours as well. I think.
Yeah, no, I'm not disagreeing on that either.
Yeah,
I got you.
Are you in or are you out?
Number three, last night. Hey, how about my Knicks? Couple in a row. I know there's no Klay Thompson there, but they did beat the Warriors, and they beat them pretty handily last night.
Yeah, you got to watch out for R.J. Barrett and who's the other?
Mitchell Robinson.
No.
You talk about Elfrid Payton. Talk about Kevin Knox. About Nick. A Nick?
Yeah, Nick. Who's the other?
What position?
Kentucky.
Randall. Gotcha.
They are leading by far.
Minutes. I hear you.
By like seven a game.
I know. That's one thing that
they're
Phipps
one
has
and
done
two.
A lot.
They're 1-2 in the NBA in minutes.
I know.
By a lot.
Yeah, there's something actually about R.J. Barrett who's playing really well in the Blast, so we'll save that for that. This is more about Draymond got the hook last night. I was watching this live, and I couldn't understand what the heck happened.
No.
Got bounced in the second quarter, picked up a second technical. Now, the thing was, Draymond was actually yelling at James Wiseman, but the referee, I forget who it was, actually thought that Draymond was directing his ire at him, and they bounced him. Now, Steve Kerr wanted to challenge the call, but it was non-reviewable. And after the game, Kerr said the refs admitted their blunder.
At halftime, Ben Taylor came out and told me that it was a mistake, that John Butler didn't realize that Draymond was yelling at his teammate. He thought he was yelling at him.
Okay. Inbounds, out of bounds. Technical fouls should be reviewable.
I'm going to say inbounds of this, BT. Now, I don't know if they have audio, but I'm sure they have to at some point have audio. But you think about what this referee, like, what could have been the technical? You know what I mean? Like,
why would an F-bomb coming at him?
Yeah, but why would he have been yelling at him? You know what I mean? Why? It was clearly a turnover. I don't know if you saw the play.
I was watching it. Of course,
saw the play. But yeah. It was like it was.
They were going back the other way.
It was either a horrendous throw by Draymond Green or pass by Draymond Green or James Wiseman screwed up. The ref was nowhere near it. So I don't know what that referee thought.
Well, you could hear it, though. You don't have to necessarily be in the
understand,
vicinity to
hear
somebody.
But why would he think it was being directed at him?
Because Draymond always directs stuff at the refs.
Yeah.
He does.
Yeah,
but and usually, he did 10 minutes before that.
But usually it's purposeful. It's like because they directed something wrong.
Then we've got to read intent. I mean,
yeah, of course.
If you undress somebody, but there's no intent, you
I'm
still got to text.
Inbounds.
Funny thing is, I'm going to say inbounds too, but with a caveat.
Go ahead.
Only the second one, which will lead to the ejection. I don't need to start wasting time reviewing the first technical foul. You get slapped with a T, whatever. Now, if you want the league office the ability, which they have, to rescind the technical foul because there's a $2,000 fine that goes with it. Actually, it might be more than I think it's 2,000.
Yeah, and it adds
for the
your total.
And then after five, it goes up. Blah blah blah. And then of course you have to sit a game, etc. But if it's the second one and that will result in a direct expulsion from the game, I would like to have the means to go to the videotape if we can, Warner Wolf, and see if they actually got this wrong.
Yeah,
which they did. Yeah. So yeah, I'm kind of with
especially
Carr
when it's in the second quarter.
Either way, first quarter, that's almost immaterial to me. But
it was early in the game.
I know it was early, second quarter. But you can't – I mean, that just looks bad. I mean, he's getting on a rookie, trying to coach him up a little bit, toughen him up, and he gets bounced for nothing. Yeah, that just can't happen.
Yeah.
Can't happen. Speaking of undressing, Shaq. What are you doing, Shaq? I mean, either you love it or just – flat out, straight up disrespectful, what he did to Donovan Mitchell after the game. I'm kind of in between, but admittedly, I'm more anti-Shaq on this one. And we'll flush through it, get to that. We'll play it for you, too. It's pretty harsh. Third hour coming up.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.